8 o'clock hour. Welcome back, 96.5 The Fan, Jay Binkley, Julio Sanchez. Producing the Operation Chiefs Camp begins less than a month. Isn't that crazy how fast the time flies, Julio? It's like they keep going to the Super Bowl every year, so it seems like the offseason, not the offseason. And it just stops right there. That music's blaring. Let's rock on, man.
You know, this is why we work the night shift,
hey,
you know?
It sounds good to me.
Right?
Sounds good to me.
Bring a little livelihood to this show.
It's like Alex and Cody will have a club or a fan club music on at 1 o'clock. One, the two.
Where they drink alcohol. They kind of stole our segment, you know?
Hit the beer fridge back right there.
I see that. It's full of beer, by the way. I don't think they're doing their job properly.
Yeah, Friday nights, man, we used to have some fun. We just stopped
bring
football
that back,
talk. We just stopped football at 7:30.
And just talk beer.
It was beer. Because I found out.
Free beer. Who
market studies told me. And if I didn't have market studies, I wouldn't have known. But football fans like beer. I mean,
shocking.
I mean, it is. Isn't it crazy?
Shocking.
I mean, market research would say that football fans drink beer. I mean, I would have never guessed. I would never guessed why so many beer commercials during football that they go hand in hand, right? Who would have thought I would need a market study to know that, right? But regardless, we would stop the show for half an hour and we'd talk beer and football mixed.
Not just talk. We'd drink. Beer.
We would drink the beer.
You know, all the beers.
We played the game. We played drink the beer. And when you won, you'd win another beer.
That sounds like the kind of game I want to play.
It was Friday night. Friday night in the big city, man. Friday in the big city. You talk football, you drink some beer. Talk some Chiefs. But now we're going to talk some Royals. We'll get back to Chiefs in just a minute. The Kansas City Royals lose today to Tampa. And yeah, I know they swept the Rays earlier this year. 3-3 against the Rays last year. 3-4 against them 2 years ago. They've always been right there. Matt Quatero, former Ray. Matter of fact, Matt Quatero was a member of the original manager of the Rays, a member of the Tampa Bay Devil Rays before they even had a pro team. They had their minor league system first before they, you know, unveiled the pro team, right? He was on that team. He was in the minors for them. He was a Devil Ray. And I brought this up when people were like, no, they call them the Rays now. No. When he played, they were the Devil Rays. And they still
back
wear throwbacks
the
to being the Devil Rays. They still wear those jerseys this year even. They'll even wear Devil Ray stuff. But he wasn't a Ray. He was a Devil Ray. They changed the name to just be the Rays.
I like Devil Rays better.
They did too.
You know.
Because if you look at the jerseys and whatnot, you'll see the sunshine on there and stuff. You say, the Florida, the Tampa Rays, like the sunshine, the Rays. They still have like.
I never thought of that, but that's. You're right.
It's
about
like
that.
A double entendre of what the name is. But they still have Rays at the stadium, or I don't think they do now, but when they played in that crap
Devil
hole,
Rays, you're talking about?
The Trop, they would have actual Devil Rays there, you know, Rays that people could see. Like yeah. Rays, it was smart. It's kind of your mascot. So I have the Rays around the field. I doubt they brought those to Steinbrenner Field where they're playing now because that roof blew off, you know, with the hurricanes. They're allegedly going to fix it.
Yeah.
But, of course, news is out they're going to be sold to a land developer in Jacksonville, which means where do you want to go? Because remember there was talk a couple years ago they play half their games in Montreal, half in Tampa.
Yeah, that was a mess.
They're a team without a home. The TV ratings, their actual TV contract's higher than the Royals. People actually watch that team. They don't go to those games.
That also happens when you're good.
Consistently good baseball team. In the transplants. Like, you're in Florida there. When they play the Yankees.
People like baseball, too, you know?
Yeah, but a lot of like East Coast transplants down there. You know, a lot of people around here, they go up to Arizona and stuff in the winter and everything. A lot of transplants from East Coast, they go to Florida. So when the Red Sox or Yankees, something like that, they'd fill up and they play. But I digress. It was 5-1, four hits game one. They were almost no hit. There's almost a perfect game thrown against the Royals. Against the pitcher, wasn't very good. And game two? 3-0, three hits. So if you were pissed off at game one, you were even more pissed off in game two. It's the way it works.
I laugh not to cry.
It's just the way it works. I mean, you might be mad and upset, but guess what happens is you flip it around and the same thing happened. I went on with Bob and Dusty on at 6:45, as I do every Wednesday, talk football with them. There was some baseball stuff in there as well. They asked me what I thought about the game. This was from Tuesday night's game, but this is Wednesday morning.
That game last night really pissed me off, to be honest with you.
And you know what? Game two pissed you off because you think the team should be better. Game three?
Is it going to get better?
Stay pissed. Yeah. Okay. Hold that energy because you went out there and they looked like crap. It was 4-0 today. 5 hits game 3. It's a grand total of losing 3 games, 12-1. Again, the pitching staff kept them in at 5. They should have won 3-0. 4-0 game, you can still win those games. I mean, it's what teams do all the time. 12 hits in 3 games. 12. You remember the days growing up, Julio?
That should be one game.
But it was,
that should be one game.
12 hits, you'd win a dozen donuts, wouldn't you? It was like a promotion. Did they have that?
Ain't nobody getting donuts this season.
They did it in 3 games. If I was a donut company, I would do it for the Royals, man.
12 hits in a series.
Because you're not paying crap, man. If I was any donut company in this town, I'd say, hey, let's start a promotion. We'll give away a dozen donuts for 12 hits.
The Royals, you know, at this point, you wouldn't accept that. Because they know that's just free advertisement, you know? There's no payout on that.
It's not, but that would have done it. You should have done it.
It would be more embarrassing for the Royals.
But if you're Daylight Donuts or whatever great donut places there are, there's a bunch. Donuts are a good thing, man. Great thing.
Donuts are excellent.
But 12 hits in 3 games? Come on. That's
a little embarrassing.
If Tuesday night's game pissed you off, Wednesday's pitched you off more, and today, you're still pissed. And I don't blame you. And then the storm hits, and it looked like crap, and that's kind of how they played. And everybody's got expendable dollars that can go spend. And, yes, there's the core that'll go to every game. You know, they have season tickets. They'll go to all the games. Okay. They're smart with how they do it. You know, maybe eat before, because you're not going to eat the stadium every single time you go out there, but you go out there. But a lot of times families will say, yeah, let's go June 23rd. Let's go to July 21st. So they pick a couple games. That's what they go to. Or they drive down from Des Moines or drive down from Lincoln or up from Wichita or whatever, and they go to the game. And you buy the tickets, and you buy the parking, and then you get the concessions. Little known fact, you can bring your own food in there. I don't know if you knew that, Julio.
I did not.
They will allow you. It's not like NASCAR where you can bring your own beer in. Much different deal. That's awesome, by the way. So you go out there, and you're still spending a lot of money, but you at least want to be entertained, right? You want to see some effort. You want to see some hustle. You want to see maybe some red ass that you saw in 14 and 15. Not taking the crap when you have runners in scoring position and other teams man up against you and say, hey, we're not going to let you score. We're going to pitch inside. We're going to do things. We're going to aggravate you. We're going to frustrate you. We're not going to let you score. You might get on, but you're not getting in the promised land. And that's what's happening with this team. And you got the same hitting coach. You haven't made any changes. I'm not saying you bring a different hitting coach. It changes everything. You kind of are what you are. But I'll be honest with you, I would make the change from Alex Zumwalt. I would make
it's not going to hurt, right?
It's not going to hurt because it may help you for a month or month and a half or two. Maybe it doesn't, but it might. Well, I've seen coaching changes all the time. What happens? And you get a little fire in the beginning. You don't. Now, it shouldn't be at the managerial level or front office, any of that. Hitting coach, stuff like that, you can do. You can tangibly do that because you don't have the proven results. You don't. And it's not about hitting. It's about runners in scoring position and scoring. I mean, it's very simple what's going on.
I believe this stat is correct. I heard CDOT give earlier of the 5 bottom offensive teams in the league right now. The Royals are the only one that has not gotten rid of their hitting coach at this point.
They do. It happens all the time. And you see it in the NFL all the time.
Something has to give.
If you're not scoring points, how many times you see the offensive coordinator get demoted or whatever and the head coach take over play calling duties? Because in his past, he's been an offensive. You see it all the time. Well, we're relieving so-and-so of their duties to still stay around. They'll get the check or whatever, but the play calling is going to head coach or whatever.
Well, and it's unfortunate for him. I mean, let's be honest. Coming into the season, we knew where their faults were. Going into the offseason, we knew where their faults were, where they needed to strengthen this offense, especially in the outfield.
The good news was it was good enough last year to be, you know, get you to the postseason.
Yeah, but that was kind of lightning in the bottle. You knew you needed to improve bats in the outfield.
Yeah,
that was hard. That was not done, and they relied on individuals that they knew they shouldn't have relied on.
And they made it a couple attempts to go out and do it. At least they did the right thing.
They tried. They didn't succeed.
But it came to MJ Melendez, you know, wasn't doing well. Boom, back to AAA. Perfect. Hunter Renfroe. Not cutting it, gone. Okay, these things happen. That's a good move by the organization.
No, that's what I said. They basically pulled all the levers at this point that they could pull, other than I guess really getting rid of their hitting coach. There's no one else to bring up.
No,
I don't know that you're going to be.
Sometimes a fresh attitude helps. You know, it just does.
Yeah. But a new pair of eyes on things to help maybe bring some new ideas or.
It's like when George Brett took over at hitting coach. It's like, all right, you better listen to this dude. You better listen to one of the greatest hitters of all time. Listen and soak in all the information. And if you don't. That's your problem. That's a you problem if you're not listening to one of the best ever, you know, impart his wisdom on you for the time that he's there. Listen to him.
Yeah. At this point, the Royals just need to do it. Man, the core players need to step it up.
But the pitching staff hasn't taken a step back, and you would think, all right, number two and number four in last year's Cy Young and Cole Reagans, who's been on the shelf now. Seth Lugo, you know, battled a little bit of injuries here and there, but he's been looking awesome, to be honest with you. But you did lose 2-4 there for a while. You still lost two in Cole Reagans, but then Bubich stepped up. This pitching staff is good enough to win in the postseason. In NFL terms, you still have an elite quarterback because they're still elite. ERA 3.41, fourth in Major League Baseball, third in the American League. As far as the starters are concerned, fifth in ERA, third in the American League. The relievers, a little step back from them, but they're seventh in all of baseball, and they're fourth in the American League. You can win with that. That is a prescription to win. But you got to have the hitting to go with it. Like, one side of your ball is elite and the other one's not. But this pitching staff is good enough in a series in the postseason to win. But you're not scoring runs. And we all know they're not scoring runs. It's a broken record saying this. But it's frustrating. You keep thinking they're going to change. Tonight's the night they're going to change because they did it in Texas. You know, a day off, and then boom, they sweep them. Win the first night in San Diego, then boom.
Just enough hope, right?
That Sunday, because they did lose their last two, but that Sunday game, man, where they could have had a 5-1 road trip, day off, get the Rays coming in. You got to show them something because the Rays are battling the Yankees here first place. They were within a game yesterday. I'll look and see what the Yankees did, but they were just within a game with them. But it's going to be tougher because you still got a series with Seattle before the All-Star break there. You know, going for a wild card as well. And Cal Raleigh, their catcher's going nuts, hitting home runs every time he's at the plate. And yeah, the Pirates. But you might have to deal with schemes. You might have to. But the Royals are on no-hit alert. I mean, if there's any team in Major League Baseball on no-hit alert, it's them.
It's embarrassing.
Then you got the Mets. Guess who's coming to town? Gene Battaglia.
Yep.
Gene, the dancing machine. Hosts a show, a sports show in New York. Rochester, New York.
He is our
friend. We became friends with him because of Mahomes.
The healthy rivalry.
It started with Mahomes coming to Kansas City because they traded Buffalo. They carry the Buffalo Bills games. They're at every day of training camp. So it became, hey, thank you. And then it became play the Bills in regular season. Ha ha, they talk. Postseason, we talk. They lose, we win. Make bets with them, beer bets. Hey, send your best from Rochester. They keep doing it. I'm tired of it. So then I said, instead of calling sister station, call us your daddy station. Because they're an Odyssey station too. So they do. So they lived
sister
up on that.
Sister station. Yeah.
So when you go on, instead of sister station, Jay from our sister station in Kansas City, it's Jay from our daddy station in Kansas City. Because we are. That's the way we are. But Gene's coming in town to watch the Mets and Royals. Which is funny because, like, where Kansas City sits, like in Western New York's mind. Julio, you're from Western New York.
I'm from Rochester. That's correct.
You're from Rochester. But it's a beautiful city. It's a great city. But it sits right down the lake and everything. But anyway, they keep losing the Chiefs in the postseason. And then Gene's a Mets fan, which, of course, he's coming to watch the Mets and Royals. And we know what happened in 2015. He's like constantly reminded of failure.
Do you feel bad for him? Because I don't. Yeah.
No. He's going to come do a show here. He's going to come do a show. I'm taking him out to Kauffman Stadium.
Are you going with him?
Oh, I am.
Nice.
Going with old Gene. Some bonding time with Gene, hopefully.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens.
Tell him I said hi, please.
Yeah, we will. But it'll be inside part of the time, too, you know. So
you're going to take him out for some wings?
You know what? No, because he should be used to wings where he's at. Even though we have some great wing places in Kansas City, but I don't want him to feel comfortable. I want to get him to what we're known for, and that's the BBQ. So I've got arrangements for us to go eat barbecue. I might could take him the wings, but he might complain about it. He is from Rochester, right?
Yeah. It's not the move.
There's a ton of wings there. I mean, there's a few places in Kansas City I think could compete with them, like Al's in Parkville.
You know,
The Smokehouse wings. I mean, that just falls off the bone.
Peanut
wings. I mean, but again, that's kind of their deal, man. To be like, if I went to Rochester and he took me to barbecue,
yeah, I'd
be like, come on, dude. I don't need no New York barbecue. I got it here in Kansas City, man. I can't spit without hitting the barbecue restaurant. You know what I'm saying? It's like part of what we are. It's part of what we do. I mean, it's great stuff. But coming up next, though, I've talked a lot about the offense. Let's talk about the Chiefs' defense, particularly defensive backs. A friend, a show friend, Court, sent something in and said, can you say the top five defensive backs in the history of Brett Veach and what he's done? And I've liked, especially with Spags working with them. We'll talk about those defensive backs with the Kansas City Chiefs next.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5, The Fan.
Good Welcome back out there. Jay Binkley, Julio Sanchez. Didn't look too bad out there right now, Julio. See some sunshine.
Yeah, it's supposed to clear up for the next few hours.
Yeah. So it did happen, maybe not exactly when you predicted it. I am no weatherman, but I do pay attention. It's also kind of common sense because it's just what happens in Kansas City. It's like crap one
minute, the truth.
Like nice the next. You know what I'm saying? That's what happens. Especially on pop-up type stuff. Like long, prolonged rains or whatever. It would be cloudy for days, right?
Like Rose baseball.
Yeah, Rose baseball. I kind of live in the abyss, though. Because we haven't like seen a lot of rain and stuff. 913-586-7965, our Jay Southland Tow Service text line, if you'd like to text in. The question of the hour is, had a listener send in a question. Hey, can you talk about the top five defensive backs in the Brett Veach era? And we, hey, listen to anybody. Anybody has questions, comments about the Chiefs going forward or whatever. So I said, that's not half bad thinking. I like talking. Defensive backs don't get talked about enough.
I like lists, too,
I gave offensive linemen a lot of love because they deserve it. I'm a former offensive lineman. I respect what they do, and I understand how smart they are. But as far as top five ever, text it in, 913-586-7965. In the Brett Veach era, your top five defensive backs, because I think a lot of it does go hand-in-hand with Spags. Spags an old defensive back coach. Of course, he's been a head coach, but he cut his teeth on being a defensive back coach. He's very good with it. As a matter of fact, through the draft, Andy Reid did a lot of that in Philadelphia. And you've heard it, he doesn't do it here in Kansas City, but he listens to his coaching staff, and that's what makes him great. Hey, who do you like? And supposedly, they come out with a list, 5-10 guys or something you like, and then they do extra work on those guys. Here, Andy, look at this handful of guys. Which ones do you like better? Or Spags, when it comes to defensive backs, which ones do you like better? Because they've worked out for him. I remember the Eagles Super Bowl. Ozzie Johnson played on special teams. He helped out there. Jalen Watson, 7th-round pick, stepped up, did some things. Nice for the Chiefs. This year, they go corner in Noel Williams. Last year's Jaden Hicks, the safety, to replace Justin Reed. The year after, they're good at the year after type things. Jaden Hicks, who was the I love Jaden Hicks and what he can do from Washington State. Dean Brugler, who probably does the best mock draft stuff, in my opinion, he puts out this guide called The Beast that comes around the NFL mock, or NFL, not the mocks, but the NFL draft season. And it's a great detailed look, Julio. And he had Jaden Hicks as the 39th best player in that draft. And of course, we're talking about a mid-round guy here that goes later on. And a lot of people said the best safety, which comes here. He leads his team in interception, and he's a thumper. But if I had to say who's your favorite defensive back, it could be corner, it could be safety, it could be whatever, who would your best defensive back in the Brett Veach era, who would it be?
For me, it's
for you.
It's got to be Trent McDuffie, right?
You know what?
It's got to be the number one right now.
You know what? As far as talent-wise, yeah, I think you could make that argument that Trent McDuffie has been the best that they've gone out and got. But is that your favorite? Is it your favorite? Because I think there is a difference. You say he's the best. He's my favorite, too. That's fine. Like, Trent McDuffie is a strong answer. It's a great move the Chiefs did and Veach did to snake up there and get ahead of Buffalo because Buffalo was going to get him. And typically, GMs will look at the draft and they'll put first-round grades, in 12 to 15 guys, right? Because essentially, after 15, if you're drafting the first round, you're still a first-round pick because you get that fifth-year option. But teams don't label you first-round picks, right? You might as well be a second-round pick or something in their minds. But Trent McDuffie was still on their list, and he starts slipping in the draft, and all of a sudden the Chiefs think they have a tangible way to get him. So they made a move to jump up over Buffalo and get him, and they did. And Buffalo was stuck with Kyrie Elam, who turned out to be crap.
Yeah.
But they ended up getting him. So if I said, who's your favorite? Is Trent McDuffie your favorite? Because that's a good answer. Any way you go, that's a good answer.
It is just as an all-around guy. I really did love the grit of L'Jarius Sneed, though. He was just such a tough bully guy on the line there. He's a close second.
Mine would be Sneed.
Yeah.
Because of who and what he was. 4th-round pick. You saw how tough he was. You saw the difference he made in that forced fumble in Buffalo. And L'Jarius Sneed would be way. Now, McDuffie was 2. And I can't, McDuffie's awesome. Can't really complain, but I just like Sneed. Like, I just liked his attitude. I like the way he played, how hard he played. To me, it was Sneed. Is that fair?
That's absolutely fair.
And as far as impactful, too, as far as my top five, I think that the Honey Badger made a big difference when he came. Now, of course, he went on New Orleans and all that. But when they got him, I'll never forget, because Dusty was doing the show that night with me there. That it was at night. When they signed, because everybody's like, what, Chiefs aren't doing anything. They maybe they go and sign the Honey Badger. And I always liked the Honey Badger in college and everything else. But they kind of changed the culture around a little bit as far as the defense. And say what you want about him, but it did help the Chiefs win that ring. Like, Honey Badger was a part of that. He's a part of the culture transformation for that defense.
He was. And I would put him up there. Only thing with that is the way he left. He left a sour taste in my mouth, man. Just
well, the way happen he with social media.
Some of the the social media thing that knocked him down a few pegs for me. Not gonna lie.
But I'll say this: Brett Veach has been a master at getting players outside the first round, especially defensive backs. And Veach's problem is it's a good problem to have is. He's so good at drafting that he drafts players and ends up having to pay them, right? You got Trey Smith sitting here at the franchise tag. It was a sixth-round pick, and he's being paid like a first-rounder. Creed Humphrey wasn't paid like a second-rounder when he got his big cash. He's a top-paid center in the National Football League. Matter of fact, Chiefs have four positions. Out of all the positions in the NFL, if you lumped them all together, offensive, defensive, 22, and you had the punter and the kicker, 24 positions, four of them belong to the Kansas City Chiefs. That's tough to do. Like, that is tough to do if that's what you say. So I put Snead there. Number, that is three because I went Snead, Honey Badger, and I go Justin Reed. I'm going Justin Reed, Snead, McDuffie, Badger, then Reed. And I know Reed's not here again, going to New Orleans. But, you know, I think that experience that he had when he played the Chiefs and they had that, were losing 24-0 to Houston and came back, like he saw firsthand. But he really helped kind of glue that secondary together because the secondary has been very good when he's been here. But I put Justin Reed there as far as guys and their impact with the Kansas City Chiefs and what they did.
100%.
Because I don't like to like, totally poo-poo guys when they leave. You know, look at what they did.
No, and he was such a stand-up guy. I mean, he was a model citizen as far as a Chiefs player goes with the community and everything. So,
and the other one is Jalen Watson. I mean, this guy's collected rings with the Chiefs. This guy's been, you know, and for being a seventh rounder. Like, seventh rounder, you don't have many expectations, do you? But part of that 2022 draft class, which was simply amazing, you think about how good that class was. Trent McDuffie and Karloftis were your first-round picks. No complaints, because I actually think Karloftis is going to get a career high and get at least 12 sacks this year. So it was McDuffie, Karloftis, Sky Moore. Okay, I get it. That hadn't worked out. Brian Cook, then Leo Chanel, contributor Joshua Williams, contributor Darren Kennard, no longer here. Jalen Watson, seventh rounder, plays. Isaiah Pacheco was your leading rusher in that 23 Super Bowl. But Watson, Pacheco, and Nazi Johnson like contribute on that team. Matter of fact, I brought it up before, but Brett Veach made a comment at the parade, right? Holds up Lombardi and says, this is what a rebuild looks like. Because he had to build this team because he's spending all his cash other places, had to cash in the seventh round. But I've always liked Jalen. And you know what? We haven't seen him play yet. But Noel Williams is one of my favorite dudes. But we haven't seen him actually play a game yet. He's a rookie. He was drafted out of Cal this year, who led the nation in interception. We talked about him earlier. I talked about his head coach that came on and talked about him. But when I look at this list, yeah, sure, Josh Simmons, a chance to start if he's healthy, that'll help. But the other guy I do believe from this draft class that'll start at some point, I don't think right away, but by 4 weeks in the season, Noel Williams will start for this team.
You think so?
I do.
I got to see more. I got to see more at a training camp, you know?
So
I got to see him with the pads on.
Any other favorite defensive backs I'm missing here?
No, I mean, that's pretty much it, at least for the Veach era, right?
But Jaden Hicks can definitely get on here. I mean, that dude's a dude, man.
He could be. Is his year, right?
Jaden Hicks can really get up on here. 816 says, Honey Badger was soft. Too many business decisions and finger points.
Yeah, the tackling thing was an
issue. It got to be that point. I get you. I agree.
He didn't start that way.
I agree with you. But when it got here, it was kind of that culture shift. Come to Kansas City, you know, build this defense up and do that. I mean, I kind of look at what he did that parlayed into a Super Bowl ring against the Niners, right? It helped. Like, that's the only reason he's on the list is because I did think he helped change that culture for the way that we looked at the defense. But anyway, man, defensive backs don't get a lot of love. But, man, I tell you what, they're imperative, though, in Steve Spagnuolo's system when he decides to blitz the corners. because that's really like Trent McDuffie on blitzing stuff.
Masterful.
He is. I mean, he finally got two interceptions last year because he hadn't had a pick yet until that Cleveland game where he's watching the scoreboard behind him and got that interception. But getting to the quarterback, that's what matter of fact, the Chiefs lead the NFL in defensive back blitzes. And Noel Williams, who didn't have a sack in college, he's a guy that's really physical, can play up on the line. Look for him to blitz in spec system. Like, look for him to do it.
Disguises it very well.
Because this team finished second in sacks for 2 years in this three-year Super Bowl run where they're back-to-back-to-back. The first 2 years, they were number two in the NFL in sacks. People have talked about Philly being number one a couple years ago when they beat Philly in that one. But Chiefs are number two. And they were number two the next year, and they slid all the way back to 18th, tied for Buffalo last year. So they slid back. I think they'll get back there this year. But they had the manufacture, you know, from cornerback blitzes. Leo Chanel, who's plays a lot of inside or off-ball linebacker, not really known for his pass rushing, but he's actually very good at pass rushing. College Football Focus kind of grades what they did. He actually had a higher grade at Wisconsin than what T.J. Watt had at Wisconsin. Believe it or not, like Leo Chanel, he did lead the Badgers in sacks as well. But I didn't even bring up Shamari Connor. Like, Shamari Connor's been one of my favorite Chiefs draft picks, too. Yeah. Didn't even bring him up. I love Shamari Connor and his versatility. You can play him at corner. He'll play safety. He'll do whatever you want. And not only that, when he was at Virginia Tech, he actually led the Hokies in sacks 1 year as a defensive back. Can you see the method to the madness? Can we see here what Brett Veach is doing and what the Chiefs do? Versatility. The guys can do other things. They fit right into the system. Again, build the team for the ballpark, right? Do we want to see for baseball? So what the Chiefs have been able to do with football. And it's a very good thing. Coming up next, I did see an article from NFL.com that kind of went out and listed the weaknesses for every single NFL team. So, of course, they had to find what a Chiefs weakness was. And it's pretty predictable, actually. I'll bring it up next.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.
Welcome back, 96.5 The Fan, your home of the Kansas City Royals, Kansas City Chiefs. If you live in Kansas City, what else do you need? Also, Kansas State football and KVZ, Missouri. What else do you need, Julio, if you get the Chiefs and Royals? That's all we need. We just need the Royals to start winning. 816, Bank, look to the southwest. I am. I don't see anything. What am I supposed to see? There's a couple texts. Look to the southwest. I am. We'll see what happens, but I think it's going to, I'm not going to say anything about the weather because who knows what happens. It could change in the drop of a hat. But regardless. So CBS Sports, biggest red flags for 2025 NFL contenders. Offensive line. Real problem for a lot of the teams. Offensive line durability, like Baltimore. The one thing about the Ravens is, Ravens getting a lot of love. Remember, vengeance tour for Lamar Jackson. You know, Jair Alexander signed with the Ravens. Good signing for him as corner, not the end-all, be-all for him. But I'll say this, they needed that. Like, the Ravens, for as much credit as they get, their secondary last year sucked. It was second in the NFL. Second worst to Jacksonville. Like, Jair Alexander makes a lot of sense. Like, the Ravens are good at a lot of things. They weren't last year against the pass. Jair makes a lot of sense, and I knew it was going to happen. As soon as he's like, guys, he's a Raven. And then Lamar Jackson spoke about him and all that, and I was like, they were teammates at Louisville. They were both first-round picks. And Jair actually went way ahead of Lamar. He went like 18th in that draft, and Lamar was 32. But they say Chiefs offensive line stability. Again, it goes back to the same thing. It's the biggest question mark. This is what they say about it. They said the Ravens just need their front to stay healthy. The Chiefs, meanwhile, may or may not have a title caliber line at all. That was clear as day in the Super Bowl when the Philadelphia Eagles tore them to pieces. True. Rendering Patrick Mahomes a non-factor. That happened. That's true. Now all-pro interior man Joe Tooney is gone. True. Two new faces occupy the present and or future at left tackle with Josh Simmons and Jalen Moore tasked with protecting Mahomes' blindside. That's a fair amount of pressure for improving blockers. 100% nailed it, accurate, that's right. That's the biggest question mark. Because you look at this team, I mean, you think about the offensive line success, you say, why are the Chiefs so bad on third and one? Why are they so bad on fourth and why are they so good in third and five? Whatever, throwing the ball with Mahomes? Well, of course they are. Because run blocking for that 1 yard, it remains the biggest, it's life's biggest mystery, man. They won't do the tush push, so forget about that. That sucks because it'd probably be pretty damn effective, to be honest with you.
Or the QB sneak.
And the one thing about the tush push, the Chiefs do utilize that. They just don't do it with the quarterback. You ever notice, like, Pacheco or whatever gets 2 or 3 yards down the field, then Trey Smith or Creed Humphrey comes behind him and shoves him forward or into the end zone? You know what I mean? They do utilize that. It may not be the tush push in name, but that's why I think some – that's why I don't think it passed, even though 22 teams voted to ban it because – they use it. And the Chiefs still utilize the tush push. It just wasn't the quarterback tush push. They changed the language. They can't push players, which you used to be able to do until 2008 when they changed the rule. So it's been around for years where teams can do it. They just weren't doing it. And that was the problem. But yeah, that's a problem. And to me, that makes everything go around because you think about the quality of this offensive line. I mean, there's some quality. Forgetting all the talk it gets about, it's accurate because the Eagles didn't even blitz the Chiefs, but still got the Mahomes. That means it's a real problem at times. And short yardage is a problem. It shouldn't be. Because, one, you've got Creed Humphrey. It's a top-paid center in the NFL. All-pro. Perfect. You know, he does a great job. You got Trey Smith. He's a pro bowler. And then when you had Joe Tooney here on last year's team, you had two first-team all-pros, and you had a pro bowler. So three pro bowlers in that interior chunk, but then that just leaves the tackles. That leaves Juwan Taylor, and that leaves just the abyss that's been a left tackle. But that makes everything go. It's why left tackle is, I think, one of the top four positions in football. Quarterback, tackle, edge rusher, shutdown corner. But it showed you how glaring that was. To me, you already know what everything else is, Mahomes and everybody else. The most crucial position this team has is that left tackle. 100% true in that. Whether it's going to be Jalen Moore, whether it's going to be Josh Simmons, that say, hey, he's fine. He's getting back again. Got to take it easy with Josh Simmons because I don't think you want to rush this guy. If you want him to be serviceable in the future, you don't do it. But yeah, left tackle makes everything better. It makes the fact the Chiefs, you know, were second worst in the NFL at air yards plus 25 yards, right? You can't do it because you don't have the time to throw it. And wasn't that frustrating watching the Super Bowl when Mahomes couldn't even throw it downfield at all or attempt the pass because he was on his butt because they were getting to him, right? It was frustrating. It was frustrating watching that. Do I think things happen good, like Breshard Davis in the backfield, who was a former converted, you know, wide receiver at Miami to what he did at SMU? Means he's got pretty much low hits on his body, too, because of he wasn't running back for just 1 year at SMU. That'll help on wheel routes and stuff like that. But they've got to find a way to give Mahomes protection, because if they do, well, they're already having success. It's hard to argue with the success, but them even more. They'll have even more if they can find a way to keep Mahomes upright, because to me, that's priority number one all times. Draft, free agency, you name it. What can we do to help Mahomes? Whether it's drafting a receiver, tight end, lineman, whatever, that's your meal ticket. You only have a window with him. Utilize every single second you can. Because how many years? Yes, Lynn Dawson was great. But that time in between, you know, the Bill Kinneys of the world, the Tyler Thigpens of the world. Yeah, Alex Smith stabilized things to some extent. Andy Reid and his team, you know, made the post. They won a playoff game against Houston, but they didn't win at all. So you got to find a way to keep your meal ticket healthy. Because literally, as much as we want to think about the Chiefs and what they can do, if left tackle doesn't end up working out, that'll be the Achilles heel of this team all year.
No, it has been.
Oh, it has been.
They've been trying to solve this riddle for how many years now? And it's not from lack of trying. I mean, they've tried to address it.
And they're still having success with it. I mean, don't take everything wrong with it. They're still having success with it.
Yeah.
I just think instead of the one score games they had, you know, and going down to the wire, you know how it is watching Chiefs games. It's to the end.
Oh, my God. Always.
Like,
always.
Don't go grab a beer in the always. Fourth quarter because that's when the action happens. That's
they why can't
the
Chiefs, just blow a team out.
That's why they're primetime darlings, right? Because they're always in it right till the end. I mean, they keep their ratings dream, man, because they keep it going. You got Mahomes coming down at the end, winning the game. That's what they do. They keep you interested the entire time.
Yeah, but I don't.
They hold your attention.
I don't want that sometimes. Sometimes give me just at least a handful of games each year where we don't have to be clenching our butt cheeks at the end of every single game.
Oh, it's
sometimes I want to see a blowout. I don't want to have to pay so close attention to it all the time.
Every year I come in and say, you know what? I remember, man. It's like that Denver game, that block kick. I mean, it was literally right down to the end.
Right?
And it's so frustrating. It's just like, just go ahead and kick somebody's ass. You know, just go ahead and win by 20. It's okay. Just do it. It's okay. But I understand why their TV ratings dream, right? When you have the greatest quarterback in the game going down to the very wire, whether he's going or not, that's a ratings dream, right? They're not winning by 25 points and people click the TV off. They're watching it. No. It's unbelievable. And I remember Drew Nixon and I did a thing before the Super Bowl. We did like a couple-hour pregame type thing. And the one thing we were talking about is we legitimately thought that Mahomes was still going to do that quarterback sneak in that game. We were calling for it. Because you know how they
won't. It's going to happen eventually, right?
Yeah,
it's going to happen eventually.
But here's the thing. After the Denver game and the dislocation of his team when he got a first down, that was it. You haven't seen it again. That was it. That was done. Even though, I will say this, even Mahomes, about to, he got the first down. Like, he did get the first down on that play.
He did.
But you tell me, with all these ring around the rosy plays and Rose Bowl right and everything they've done and all the trick plays and formations they have, that's the one play that would work.
No, like there's two. That.
Okay.
And the around the back. That's gonna come too.
And we'll see that before
at some
the
point. That's
You'll
gonna
see that
happen
before the snake. But you better be up points before you do that. The behind the back pass, but they're very good at it. But you tell me, like nobody in the stands, nobody on that field would be expecting it, right? And it would work. And even Mahomes said, yeah, he's maybe in the Super Bowl or whatever. But it's got to be. It can't be a down by 20 points or whatever. You got to be. It's got to be. Fourth and one.
It's never going to happen at this point.
And a chance to
just
end the game or score that touchdown and go it up. But I hold the thought. You'll see, but it's got to be AFC title game or Super Bowl. You know what I'm saying? That one play, just to define it, because you can still do it. And you better do it now before you can do it, because next year they're going to end up banning it. You know what's going to happen? Because 22 votes already to do it. So yeah. If you're going to do it now. So I was sitting around waiting for that to happen. We actually thought it would, but then when you see how that game started and stuff, you're like, not going to happen.
No.
Not going to happen. But Andy Reid did say something in the mandatory minicamp that I think is pretty important, and I think it really gives them an edge this year than what they've had in the past, if you can believe that. I think the Chiefs actually have that edge built in with the unit on their team. We'll discuss that next.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.
Welcome back to After Hours. Jay Binkley, Julio Sanchez producing the operation. Nice job, Ben Jackson. Nice job. Great job. Great job learning from the master, Julio. How long have you been here, Julio? Since what, 13, 14? It's been a minute.
It was 14.
You were here during that great Royals run, man.
That's when I came on board. Correct.
Wasn't that fun, man?
That was a hell of a time to come on board, I'll tell you that.
Because 2013 gave us that taste.
Yep.
Because, you know, you see all these guys start coming up at 11 and 12, Moose and Hosmer and Perez and all these guys. Then they start putting things together in 13. They go all the way to the White Sox, the last series of the year. And they weren't officially eliminated until then. So they went, just give us till the end. They gave us all the way to the end to that final series. 14, they show up. You know what happened? They go through the whole postseason, sweeping everybody until they get to the Giants and them going to game 7. And freaking Bumgarner comes out there. That's, honestly, is that the one guy that haunts you the most? And if, like, Chiefs, Royals, anybody? And when we talk about hated players, there's nothing to hate about Madison Bumgarner. What about that? He didn't do anything dirty or anything. He was just damn good.
It's a name that will forever live in infamy around this place, these parts.
I remember Halloween costumes for him that year. Remember when Mad Bum came out? He came walking out those doors of the bullpen.
He was a phenomenon that year, man. Those few years, you know? Man. He was a beast.
He was so good. It was so good. But that team and what they did, and you're seeing it right here. It's why it's so tough, man. Going 7 straight years, Andy Reid won't even sniff coach of the year. Just won't do it, even though every year they're going to be good. Which is tougher to do what he's doing than these coaches to get coach of the year. Because they get it, Julio, because they suck, and then they're good. Like what they're saying is, what the NFL's saying is, in order for you to be coach of the year, you must suck and then be good the next year. Andy Reid skips the suck part, and he's just good every year, and cost him getting hardware. Not that he cares, because he gets the real hardware. That's all that matters. But Mahomes spoke about this. Andy Reid spoke about this. But one of the best news for the Kansas City Chiefs is having the same group of receivers. And you say, okay, yeah, because the Chiefs have gone out and got different guys at times. But, yeah, it is kind of the same group, isn't it? Hollywood Brown's back. He was in training camp last year. He's with his team all year, even though he didn't play for a lot until at the end of the year. But he was still around the practices, the terminology, the meetings, you name it, he was here. Xavier Worthy certainly was here as he, you know, learned the ropes last year playing with the Chiefs. Rashee Rice knows the deal, been around this team. Yeah, Jalen Royals knew the equation. And then someone, people at the end of your roster, like Tyquan Thornton, Elijah Badger, those type of guys, they're new to the deal. Nico Remigio and all these guys are back. But Andy Reid brought up an interesting point at the end of mandatory minicamp there when he spoke. And when you think about it, it's really something to get excited about this group of receivers for this reason.
Yeah, you're not going, I mean, we're teaching everything, getting out of the huddle, the snap count. That's where we started with some of these guys last year. So, yeah, no, it allows you to jump start, line up in all these crazy formations. So you had to kind of back up on some of that stuff. And it's things that you, as the season went on, we were able to expand a little bit and then hit it running here.
See, sometimes, you know, you think coaches, they say anything or not. You know, people have said with Reid, he's not going to, you know, tell you anything. Just, hey, we're doing one day at a time, so the team's good, blah, blah, blah. That was something. Like, that was something what he said. It made sense, right? Learning the snap count, getting out of the huddle, putting formations towards the middle to the end of the season because he was keeping it pretty simple for them to do because they were new to the system, new to the Chiefs. You know, Xavier Worthy was a draft pick that just came in here. Hollywood Brown was new coming in here from the Cards. You know, Rashee Rice was in year two, so he knew the deal. But you heard Andy Reid there, formations and everything, kind of wait and see and put him in later. It's all the same cast now, man. Now the same crew. They got the cadence down. They got the snap count down. They know what the formations are. You don't have to teach anymore. You don't have to wait till midseason to kind of implement those things. You can start off day one at training camp, July 22nd. You can start off with those kind of formation stuff because the guys are the same guys that you've had before. And I actually think that thing is – It's 21st, I think. That's training camp. I get them confused. But 21st, it's like, whatever. It's just one of the difference. Who cares? But anyway, I love that that group's coming back, and it only helps Mahomes because I remember, you know, Camp Pat has been great for bringing in receivers, getting used to them, timing and everything else. That's great. Like, that's awesome being able to send receivers down there to work with Mahomes to build that chemistry up, that connection. But on Reed's standpoint, it's the formations, to get down in the huddle, what he can implement in the offense. If players are going to understand the terminology because it's not an easy offense to learn. But they get here and they learn all this stuff and they know it, so it's a leg up from what they were last year. Like, that's actually a positive note. Like, we can look at left tackle and think what ifs because it could be good and could be, you know, maybe one of those things we have to look at each and every week as far as this left tackle situation with the Chiefs. But as far as wide receivers are concerned, that's good news that they're all back and coming back and poised for, I think, good years. Rashee Rice, we don't know. Like, if he's suspended, you know, the total's coming. If he's not, man, I'm expecting 1,300 yards at least from him. If he is suspended, give those to Worthy. Worthy's at 1,200 at that point then, if that happens. Now, I do think Worthy can get to 1,000 and Rice to 1,300. Hollywood Brown, I would say around 800 or so. And keep in mind, he hasn't really played a full season the last couple of years because there's only some kind of injury. It happens. But Worthy, I think, takes that step. Kelsey, can he get the 90 receptions, keep that streak going that he's got with the consecutive 90-year catches, be year 8 in a row for that? I don't know. He did have 97 last year. He may not need to this year because Rashee Rice does take a lot of those kind of dirty routes through the middle that Travis Kelce was getting, and that's good. Like, you don't need all that kind of production. Just production that happens on first down in the red zone because he's got that intangible ability. And I know it's funny because he's sitting there doing, you know, things at tight end university and showing, you know, things to do, but he's made his mark on just finding a way to get open and Patrick finding him. That's what he does. But this group of receivers coming back, it helps so much. I mean, it's one thing to have Patrick Mahomes like in gear, in continuity with the receivers, but another thing to have the formations and being able to run what you want. And not like in preseason, we're running a vanilla offense, keeping it simple. They kind of were doing that last year to some extent with all the injuries. They're just trying to make up for the injuries. Oh, what do we do now? Got to run the ball more, What, can we do the same things with receivers? They can understand the terminology. So you got to scale things back. Especially you got to scale things back when your best receiver for most of the season was a rookie coming in here, because there's only so much you can learn, but you can learn so much in the NFL by playing 1 year in the system. And it's amazing what you can do. And I really think the sky's the limit for Xavier Worthy this year. You know, I was never the type to buy into the fact that he's too small, because he didn't play small. And he plays tough. He plays hurt. He did it at Texas. He's a smart dude. He's an academic All-Big 12. He led the Longhorns in receptions and yards for not 1 year, not 2 years. He did it for 3 years in a row. That's hard to do. It's a good program down there. In two of those 3 years, he led them in touchdowns. The other year that he didn't lead them, he was second. So it's not like he's a one-trick pony, nine-route guy, vertical route guy. Yeah, he was looking at his 4.21 speed. He's all that. No, he's much more than that. He's a damn good football player. Oh, and the Tyquan Thornton that's in here for the Chiefs, that's going to be the camp guy, I think. I think people are really going to look at Tyquan. It's incredible speed. He's over 6 foot, 6'1", 6'2", around there. But he ran a 4.29 at the combine. And the funny thing about it was, when he was at the combine, Tyquan, who was taken the second round by the Patriots, he ran the unofficial, you know, when they show it on TV and Eisen's there and everything. It was 4.21 when he ran unofficially, which 4.21 would have put him number one, because that would have beaten John Ross at that point. Worthy came later. Clearly, Worthy would have tied that mark. But Tyquan went a couple hours there thinking, all right, he hit a 4.21. He didn't end up being a 4.29 because they went back, watched the film, looked at, you know, what happened during the 40. But anyway, that's why he's here. He's got the speed. Can he run the routes? That's been the big question with him. But the blazing speed with Worthy, the blazing speed with Brown, you got to be able to utilize blazing speed, because what those guys have is something a lot of NFL teams don't have, and that's elite speed, and you got to use your elite speed. By the way, the Dolphins, with that speed they have with Waddle and Hill, they were kind of towards the bottom of the pack as far as air yards over 25 yards, and they should be much more. Again, utilize your skill set. Those are guys that can stretch the defense. They're guys that can back the safeties off. All that's going to make your running game better for the Kansas City Chiefs. But I'm excited to see these receivers work if he can get protection. He should. You got two. Well, Trey Smith didn't make All-Pro, but he should have, and he will. But he was a Pro Bowler, and so is Creed. But the offensive line, if they can give the meal ticket time, good things can happen with this team. And I'm expecting that when we start seeing things roll in here in a month from St. Joe. You know, good things to happen with the receivers. But I love it, Julio. They're coming back. You got the group. You know their names. They know the formations. Let's go, man. Let's freaking go. Anyway, great job by you, Julio Sanchez, tonight. Great job, Jackson. Enjoyed it. Thanks for listening and contributing to the show. Much appreciated. Don't forget, Bob Fesco, Dusty Likens, 5:50. I think Dusty's off tomorrow, but Bob Fesco, 5:58 in the morning with Mac Morey. See you then.
Listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5, The Fan.